You're listening to the Study Legal English podcast, the world's first legal English podcast, helping lawyers and law students become fluent in legal English. Okay, so hi and welcome to the Study Legal English podcast. Today I'm interviewing Gloria Casanova Martinez, and she's from the law firm Cuatro Casas. Mm-hmm. So hi, Gloria. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming on the show.
Hi, Louise. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Tell me a little bit about the firm that you work for.
Well, I work in Cuatro Casas, as you said. It's one of the most well-known firms here in Spain. In fact, it's the most important Iberian firm.
Mm-hmm.
We have the two main offices in Barcelona and Madrid. Mm-hmm. And then we have the regional ones in whole Spain and also Portugal, and other international offices mm-hmm. around the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great, great.
And I work in the office in Girona.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Great. And tell me specifically what work do you do? Which department are you in?
I work basically in solvency proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Girona, we take two roles in these proceedings, depending on the proceeding we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
One is being the lawyer of the company, so we prepare the suit.
Mm-hmm.
That is the first step for the company to ask for the insolvency proceeding to be declared.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When we are lawyers, then we go with the company throughout the whole proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
So we make sure that the company's rights are well preserved during the whole proceeding. And the other role we can play in these proceedings is being the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
When we act as a receiver, we are appointed by the judge to take care or to make sure that the rules and the company's interests and the creditor's interests are preserved during the whole proceeding. To say it in another way, we are like the right hand of the judge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in this case, we just make sure that everything is well done according to the Spanish insolvency law.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, great. So maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But so first of all, tell me a little bit as well about legal English in your company. Is it important for the company?
Yeah, sure. In fact, Cuatro Casas asks for an advanced level to get into the firm as a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's necessary to keep working in legal English and mm-hmm. in general English to keep improving our level, because the firm, and I share this opinion, thinks that English is really essential mm-hmm. in our job, and most of all when all the cases are getting more international mm-hmm. every day, more mm-hmm. global. So we need to be able to communicate and to talk with mates of any other country and mm-hmm. with clients of any country
mm-hmm.
In English, so we can give good advice about Spanish law mm-hmm. in English too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So every 2 years we need to pass exams, so we need to keep improving our
mm-hmm.
English.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And are you dealing with international clients? How often do you deal with international clients?
Well, it depends on the operation, or or in my case, it depends on the shareholders. Maybe are
mm-hmm.
from other countries mm-hmm. and you need to communicate them, or maybe the creditors are from around the world and you need to communicate and to talk
mm-hmm.
with them, and obviously in English. So,
yes.
Well, it depends on the case we have.
Uh-huh.
There are some that are more national and you don't need to use English, but other ones that you need to use it to make your job.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yes, very good, very good. Okay, and so let's go back to the work you do. So talk me through the process from maybe from when the court appoints you as a receiver, what happens then?
Well, in an ordinary proceeding, there is a first phase that mm-hmm. it's called common phase in insolvency law. In this phase, what the receiver needs to do is a report about the company estate. Mm-hmm. And the two main documents of this report are the list of the assets of the company and the list of the creditors. Mm-hmm. Once this is fixed, this list of the assets and the creditors are definitive.
Mm-hmm. Defined.
Defined, mm-hmm. yeah. Then this phase is closed and mm-hmm. Here we have two options. The one that is the aim of the insolvency law, the most prior one.
Yeah, the priority.
The priority way mm-hmm. to go through. It's the agreement phase. Mm-hmm. In this phase, in the list of the creditors that we talk about, we have different types of creators, mm-hmm. the privileged ones mm-hmm. that are treated differently, mm-hmm. the ordinary ones mm-hmm. and the subordinated ones. Mm-hmm. Once we go to this agreement phase, the aim of this agreement phase is to reach an agreement with the ordinary creators. Mm-hmm. So the company makes a proposal of agreement mm-hmm. That can contain a write-off of their credits and some installments from 5 years to 10 years mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. could be paid or less from 0 years mm-hmm. to 10 years, mm-hmm. I would say. So depending on the terms of this agreement, of this proposal, it's needed one percentage or another of the votes of the creditors to mm-hmm. make it to be approved. Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. So once this proposal is made, mm-hmm. the judge appoints a date to make the meeting of the creditors, mm-hmm. so they can vote in favor or against mm-hmm. the proposal, and if it has enough votes mm-hmm. to approve it, then the judge makes a ruling. Mm-hmm. Saying that this agreement has been approved by the creditors, and the effects of the insolvency procedure finishes there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. Do the creditors have to be present at this vote? Can it be? Can
no,
they vote?
No, it's unnecessary. We have different options. Once the date it's appointed mm-hmm. by the court, mm-hmm. you can wait and go to this meeting and mm-hmm. vote live there. Mm-hmm. Or previously, you can go to the court mm-hmm. and say to the court what's your vote, mm-hmm. so they mm-hmm. take note about it mm-hmm. to say it in the meeting, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or you can go to the notary mm-hmm. and make a notary vote, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and then the company takes all the votes given in the notary and brings it to the court the day of the meeting. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there are many options to vote.
Yes, yes.
You don't need to be present there.
Uh-huh. And so what happens if the creditors approve this agreement? What happens next?
What happens next is that, as I said, the effects of the insolvency proceedings finishes. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that the insolvency proceeding is concluded. Mm-hmm. It's closed.
It's closed.
Because, you need to wait until all the payments, all the installments mm-hmm. are made. Mm-hmm. But in fact, the company can act in the market normally. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The receiver is not acting anymore in this company, so the administrator can be whoever mm-hmm. the company wants. And the only thing that they need to take into account is that the company needs to make the payment as they have been approved by the judge. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And every 6 months, the company needs to file a report mm-hmm. into the court saying how they are how the company is accomplishing with the agreement.
And what about if the creditors, if they don't agree, what happens then?
If the creditors don't agree with the proposal made, then it's necessarily open the way of liquidation, of winding up the company. Once this liquidation phase is declared, the administrator of the company is removed of his charge, and the only one being administrator and liquidator is the receiver. Then once the receiver is there to liquidate a company, when we act as a receivers, we need to make a plan to sell the whole assets of the company. The priority way or the priority method that the insolvency law asks for us to plan or to set, it's to sell the whole productive unit to someone in the market. So we need to open a period of time where other companies can make offers to buy this productive unit. If this is not possible, then we need to regulate how all the assets of the company are going to be sold separately. So we need to make this plan well defined. So then we need to file into the court the plan. It's approved by the judge. And once it's approved, you start executing them until you sell all the assets of the company and you close the proceeding.
And what are some, why wouldn't creditors agree to the proposal? What would be some
why
of the
wouldn't?
Reasons?
Yeah. Maybe that this could be two options. One that they don't trust in the company or in the provisions of the company of their
capability
the economical viability of the company and they don't trust it and they don't want to give this opportunity. And the other one would be the terms of the content of the agreement. Maybe they could find it too aggressive. If there's a big write-off or they need to wait 10 years to get it paid back, depending on the case, they prefer not to give their vote. Usually it's the way that the creditors can get more money back is going to an agreement, because otherwise in the liquidation phase the money that comes from the liquidation is not that much, so you don't have money enough to pay the creditors of the company. So the thing, I think the key of the agreement is that the viability or the provisions of the company, of the running of the company, are real or not.
Whether it's a realistic expectation. What sort of complications can arise in the proceedings? Are there any things that get a bit complicated?
Well, in the going a bit backwards, in the common phase, one of the key points is when we make the list of the creditors or the assets, these lists questioned by the creditors or people who have interests in these lists. In the case of the list of the creditors, the creditor can say or can claim to the judge for their credit.
Mm-hmm.
So they can say that the amount or the classification of the credit is not correct.
Mm-hmm.
So, once it happens, the judge, notifies it to the receiver, and the receiver can say if they agree or not, or don't with this, claim of the creditor. And then it starts, like a little proceeding into the main proceeding to discuss about this point. And this is one of the complications or difficulties that we can find in this, in this proceeding.
And, so, for example, is it like a subordinated creditor might say that they actually are a preferential creditor?
For example, that would be one case. That depending on the kind of the credit, they would maybe the one that the receiver has classified as subordinate might think that he's not a subordinate, that should be an ordinary or a privileged one. And then there's a discussion about it in legal terms. And the interpretation of the rule of the law in applied to this case.
Very good. And so what do you enjoy about this work?
Well, what I enjoy the most, as I said, there are two ways that these proceedings can be finished. And what I like the most is when we are able to make a company surviving this proceeding, that unfortunately there are not many cases of this, and it's quite common in Spain that the companies that go into an insolvency procedure go to liquidation because maybe the proceeding is not well used by the companies and they wait too much to get into it. And then it's difficult to make them to survive to this. But the cases where we can get the company survive and keep acting in the market, and we can preserve all the employees on. That's the part that I enjoy the most. Like the, you see, you can contribute in society in some way. It's nice.
Quite satisfying, fulfilling. Very good. What about, so you mentioned that one part of your job is acting as a receiver, and then the other part is your, like, you know, day to day being a lawyer. What sort of things do you do in the other part of your work?
When we act as lawyers in these proceedings, there are two main points during the proceeding. One is at the beginning that you need to prepare all the suit to get into the court, and there are many many points we need to prepare that are required by the law. So we need to make this provisional list of assets, a list of creditors, and accomplish all the other things that law requires. And this is a big part, and you need to prepare it well. So to make the receiver to trust you and trust the information, make it clear, make it complete. So then you can have a good relation with the receivership and with the receiver, and make the whole process easier. Because the point here is that if you have a bad suit at the beginning, then it gets a bit more complicated. But if you in the beginning can make it clear and easier for the receiver and for the client and everything, it goes easier. And then you need to be ready to attend any request of the receiver during the proceeding and make this this way through, with the client.
Very good. Okay, and let's talk just a little bit about why you became a lawyer, and perhaps a little bit about law in Spain. So why did you become a lawyer?
Well, in fact, I started studying the law degree because, well, it's a bit of idealistic 18-year-old.
Girl.
Yeah, the ideal of justice, and also to understand a bit more the world that surrounds us, because that's what I thought when I chose to study law. And then I had the chance when I was in the fifth year of my degree to go into an internship in the firm I'm working now, in Cuatro Casas. So I stayed there for some months, and I could see how the job was and what it was about, and I could take part into different cases that were running in that moment.
Yes.
And, well, I liked the job. I liked the activity and all this stuff. And, well, then I had the opportunity to stay in the firm once I finished my degree. And, well, I decided to go for it. And here I am 5 years later.
Very good, very good. And how does it work in Spain? Because in the UK, it's sort of changing at the moment, but it has been that you do a degree, you do your normally three years, then you do a short course if you want to become a solicitor rather than a barrister. So you do a short year course, and then you get something called a training contract, which normally lasts 2 years within a law firm, and you train, and then you become a newly qualified solicitor. Is that sort of similar?
Here it works a bit differently. Well, when I did it in my period of time, it was absolutely different because I did 5 years degree and then you got into the bar association that you wanted, that you chose, and then you could start looking for a job as a lawyer, and if you wanted to be well, you could do the course to be like an official lawyer, the ones that are in this list, and for people who doesn't have enough money to hire one,
they like legal aid, we call it, when it's sort of for people who can't afford legal services, government subsidized.
List. You had these two options. You could do this course to get into this list and start from this point, or just start looking for another way. But some years ago it changed. Now the degree is 4 years degree. Then you need to make a master. That is compulsory to be done. And once you finish this master, that takes, I think, 1 year and a half, you need to pass an exam, an official exam, to get the lawyer's title, to say, some way. And then you choose the bar association where you want to belong and keep on. But, well, that's it. Now we have this exam. We have one less year of the degree, but this master that needs to be done. So,
And when you mentioned that you did this internship in the UK, we have something that's normally done in like your third year at university, which is called like a vacation scheme, which is you apply to a law firm and you do like, normally it's about 2 weeks work experience within the law firm. Is that sort of what you did?
In my case, it was voluntary.
At
that moment. And you could choose, well, the university offered many places, and also if you found another place to go, another law firm, they could arrange a deal with the university to make it to. And it was for law firms and also for the court and other official organisms that had relation with law. it was in my time. I think now, well, they have these compulsory internships. So they need to, the students need to find somewhere to do this internship and get some practice. And now it's compulsory.
Okay. Yes. Yeah,
yeah. So to get the master done and to get the access to the exam, you need to do this internship. I haven't done it, so maybe there are some points that I'm missing, but in general terms, it works like this.
Okay, great. Just to sort of finish off, what are the plans for your firm in the future, or what do you, how do you see yourself going in the future?
Difficult to say. Yeah, but well, in my case, I'm lucky because I'm in a big firm, so I have many options and possibilities. Something that is required to lawyers is to have plans of future in terms of business in the company. And well, with my team, we're trying to make our project grow. Then, well, maybe in my case, I would lead, or I would keep with the insolvency proceedings, and maybe also with some mediation cases. Well, now I'm trying to get specialized in this area, and we'll see how we explode it, we use it then in our team. But well, in fact, as our job is life, as the market and as the world is. So maybe, well, we need to pay attention on what's happening around us, and we need to change or to adapt to our surroundings.
Yes. Yeah. Difficult to predict what will happen. Good. Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Brilliant. So, good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Louise.
So that's the end of today's episode. For more practice, Podcast Pro members can access online learning materials, including transcripts of the shows and quizzes to test your knowledge. If you're not a member yet, you can sign up for a free trial at www.studylegalenglish.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. And if you have any feedback or topic requests, I would love to hear from you. You can get in touch by email info@studylegalenglish.com or on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.